The recovery continues, but we're losing some momentum from Marketplace. I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio, who's on assignment. We've got the official count of jobs added to the U.S. economy from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. 1.8 million jobs added last month, 200,000 more than economists expected. The unemployment rate fell from 11.1% to 10.2%. So all in all, the economic situation is getting better, but it turns out these numbers are not quite as positive as they appear if you dig a little deeper, which is why Christopher Lowe joins us. He is chief economist at FHN Financial in New York. Hi, Christopher.
Good morning, Sabri.
So jobs added, 200,000 better than expected. That is good, right?
It's always good when you have more job growth than expected. But in this case, digging through the details, what we find is that state and local employment was up by 300,000. And that was a huge surprise because most states are already letting workers go. Turns out what it reflects is an earlier than normal start to the school year in some states. So teachers came back. They showed up as job gains in July, but of course, that means job gains in August and September that are not going to happen at the state and local level. It's really a timing issue.
Mm. Well, the unemployment rate fell from 11.1% to 10.2%. How important is that drop?
Well, it's good news, too. It's bigger than expected. 10.5% was the consensus. People did come back to work, about 1.3 million in the household survey, but the labor force fell. So it's not all great on that front either.
When you say the labor force fell, you meaning that the unemployment rate is the percentage of people unemployed out of the total number of people who are looking. So if you reduce the number of people who are looking because they gave up, the act number can look like it's improving.
That's right. And we actually do add those people back in the underemployment rate, which includes discouraged workers. That stands at 16.5%.
Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FHN Financial. Great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too, Sabri.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
Open your books to U.S. auditors or get off U.S. stock exchanges. That is the message from the Trump administration to Chinese firms listed in U.S. stock markets. Let's go through this with our China correspondent, Jennifer Pak in Shanghai. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Sabri.
What is the justification for this? What's behind this plan?
Well, right now, Chinese firms can raise a lot of money on the U.S. capital market, but U.S. regulators cannot access the financial audits of those companies. And that's just not fair, according to Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. So he wants Chinese firms listed in the U.S. to allow their books to be examined by a special audit regulator or else give up their listings. Mnuchin says this is about protecting investors from risky Chinese firms, which China doesn't buy at all.
Well, why don't Chinese firms just, you know, hand over their information or, you know, comply with U.S. accounting rules, basically?
Well, there's actually a law in China that prevents its citizens and companies from sharing audit documents with overseas regulators, unless there is approval from the Chinese market supervisor and government bodies.
How does China defend the fact that it treats U.S. firms one way and wants to be treated a different way?
It's an interesting question. China never directly addresses this. But today, China's foreign ministry said Chinese auditors have actually been working very closely with American regulators on a number of fronts, and that this dispute really isn't about accounting. It's about forcing Chinese firms to delist. And if that is the goal, officials have been very keen to emphasize that this will severely hurt U.S. investors.
Marketplace's Jennifer Pack in Shanghai, thank you so much.
Thanks, Sabri.
Now, last night, the White House also issued orders banning Americans from doing business with two Chinese consumer apps with billions of global users, TikTok, the short video sharing app, and WeChat, the social networking behemoth. Marketplace's Scott Tong, our former bureau chief in China, joins me now. Good morning, Scott.
Hey, Sabri. Good morning.
So we've talked a ton about TikTok. It sends people endless feeds of, you know, those 15-second dancing cat videos. But
yes.
What about WeChat? Why is WeChat in the crosshairs?
WeChat is what's called a super app. Imagine if you could use, say, Facebook to call and text, play a game, count your steps, buy a latte, hail a ride. You could even file for divorce on WeChat. I mean, you cannot exist without WeChat if you're in or if you're connected to China. Now, the Trump administration calls the app a national emergency threat, noting that WeChat censors political talk. It gathers data from, say, democracy activists abroad and allegedly spreads disinformation. So this order means in 45 days, any transactions with WeChat or TikTok from American persons or companies would be banned.
What, can you give us an example of how this would effectively cut off certain communications?
Well, if you're an ethnic Chinese living here, how are you going to check in with your family over there? If you're an American company trying to sell Coke or Buicks or fitness apps to a billion Chinese customers, typically you buy ads on WeChat, so you probably couldn't do that. For decades, the U.S. has blasted the Chinese internet, you know, the so-called Great Firewall of China blocking people from free information. Now you could argue that Washington is taking Beijing's playbook and building its own electronic wall.
Oh, wow. Finally, I assume there's going to be a response from Beijing.
Yeah, always happens. There will be something, and U.S. companies doing business there could be targets for retribution, Sabri.
Okay, Marketplace Scott Tong, thank you very much.
Sure.
From tensions with China to tensions with Canada now. The trade deal between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, known as the USMCA, it just went into effect last month. But a trade conflict between the U.S. and Canada is flaring up once again, nonetheless. President Trump says he wants to reimpose tariffs on some Canadian aluminum products. The president says Canada is flooding the U.S. with imported aluminum and undercutting American companies. Canada disputes that and is promising to retaliate with tariffs of its own. Let's go to Marketplace's Nova Sappho for more.
President Trump made the announcement yesterday at a Whirlpool plant in the critical swing state of Ohio after touting previous tariffs aimed at boosting American manufacturing. Among them were steel and aluminum tariffs on Canada imposed in 2018 and lifted last year during trade negotiations over the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, which replaced NAFTA. But now the president is reimposing tariffs in 9 days on some Canadian aluminum because he says the country is again flooding the American market with the raw material. Canadian trade group said any recent increase was due to pandemic-related production issues. Meanwhile, many American businesses opposed Trump's move. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce called it a step in the wrong direction. A U.S. aluminum industry trade group said the move undermined the USMCA. But American producer Century Aluminum said the reimposition of Canadian tariffs levels the playing field for American workers. I'm Nova Sappho for Marketplace.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.